thank you for a warm Florida welcome. My name is Gertrude Brown, and I am an alcoholic. Hi, everybody. And I don't ever know what I'm going to say when I get up here, whether I get out of jail or ever get to AA or what's going to happen. But I do want to begin by, and this ain't really, you know, I want to thank the committee for asking me, but I don't know if that's solely honest right now or not. I'm always nervous, but this is a lovely place. And seriously, I do want to thank you for inviting me down here. Because part of my story will go to Florida during my drinking days. And this has, you know, it has memories for me. I've been back to Florida two or three times, you know, in my sobriety. But part of my sickest drinking was in Jacksonville. As I said, I am Gertrude, and I'm an alcoholic. And I'll try to share with you as best I can what it used to be like, what happened, and what it's like now. I was raised an older child with two younger brothers in one of these fine Christian homes. No drinking. Mom and Daddy didn't drink. And we were carried to church all the time, you know, Sunday and prayer meeting and at a choir and all, yeah, all that went with it. I was raised in the church. And my mother pointed out when I was a little girl the most disgraceful sight I'd ever see in life, and that was a drunk woman at the tobacco market. See, I was raised on a tobacco farm. Part of the years we were sharecroppers, and we went on to, Daddy bought a farm, and I was raised on this tobacco farm. And you see, way back, I knew that I won't like other people, other kids. You see, Mama loved these two boys, I thought, more than me. And I always wanted to please Mama, you know. And I just wanted to please her. And she, of course, you know, these uncles of mine that drank was sorry. Yeah, you know, Mama said it's the sorriest thing that ever was, and anybody that drank was sorry. Now, this is all I knew about alcoholism, and I didn't know, and women did not drink. You know, this was absolutely a no-no. And you see, I set out, and I was confused and not as good as, and inferior to everybody and everything as far back as I could remember. And I resented Mama, too. This theme of the jamboree is beautiful for me, y'all. You don't know. Nobody could hate as much as I did. I mean, Mama, she, you know, but I wanted to please her. And I resented her and I hated her. And everything that ever happened to me was Mama's fault, too. Well, I went on and I got my chance and I wanted to get away. I didn't like that tobacco farm and I wanted to get away from that blame dirty mess. Nancy and I were talking about it. She's from Kinston, you know, in our area. And Nancy bought barn tobacco and stuff, and that's a dirty, nasty job. And I wanted to get away from Mom and get off that farm as quick as I could. Well, the opportunity came, and I'll tell you about my first drink. I had my first drink on a dare at the age of 14, and this was a water glass full of white lightning. Some cousins of mine we'd found their daddy's mason jar of white lightning, and they, well, we need the carpenters down here. God, Mary Lou, you did good. And I tore the podium up. But, let's see, where was I? Oh, the white lightning. If you've never had any white lightning, you've never lived. And we make it up, you know, up there, too. I mean, we had the stills and stuff around there. And I mean, this was, you know, I never knew about this drinks and stuff. I mean, I came up, but we found these cousins' father's liquor, and they dared me to take a drink. You know, when Gertrude, being an alcoholic before she ever had the first drink, you know, I had to want them to look up to me, this ego of the alcoholic, the self-centeredness that I have. And so I drank the whole glass. And it's a wonder, you know, it's a wonder I hadn't died. But I got drunk then, and every time thereafter that I drank, and I don't know where the fun was in this drinking that I thought was fun or whatever. I mean, this was how confused I was. So anyway, I didn't drink. Of course, they hid me from the grown-ups, you know, Mom and all of them, for a long time, you know. And they didn't let, I think I spent a weekend with them something. Anyway, I got my chance to get away from Mama. And let me inject you. I'm not proud of the things that happened to me. But my disease took me down many paths, and I can't be ashamed of it, and I've got to share it. I have to share my disease with you, and because there might be some woman out there, and the woman alcoholic, we have a tough time. I mean, we're different from you guys. We really are, emotionally, and we had a hard time getting in AA, you know, way back then. But anyway, I got my chance to get away from Mama when I was 16 years old. And I don't know but how to tell it, but just like it is, I got pregnant and had to get married. And he was 18, and he was an alcoholic. Well, we got married, and I lost the baby. And we separated. He went into service, and I went into went to beauty school. I'm a hairdresser by profession. Mama, I saw a book out there, Being Ashamed, you know, and I couldn't go back to school, and so I just quit high school after the 10th grade, and I couldn't go, you know, so I went away to beauty school, and I wanted to. Mama said, you know, she didn't like this boy anyway, and I was going to prove to her that I had to leave him then, you know, and because she's paying for this beauty course, and I had to finish that and hurry up because I was going back to hair that guy and show Mama it would work, that I could make it work, you know. I tried. Y'all don't know the hell I put me through trying to prove, you know, prove to him and prove to Mama. And that marriage about killed me too, but I was going to make it work. So I went back to him as soon as Mama finished paying for the, and I got a job. I went back to him. Two children were born, a little girl when I was 18 and a son when I was 20. And I just hadn't been around the drinking people. You know, you got to see, in North Carolina, I was raised on that farm, and it was dry. And you had to drink at the bootleggers or drive 26 miles to Southern Pines to the liquor store, and I didn't get a chance to leave home much, because they, you know, and brought up that ladies didn't do this and ladies didn't do that and all that mess, and I had to take the kids to church because Mama, you know, to please her, because I won't about let her tell nobody she took my kids to church. About this time, I was working in a large shop in Sanford. It's where I grew up. It's about 40 miles other side of Raleigh, Central North Carolina, and we went to church, and I hadn't started drinking. I just hadn't been around the people, but I had a boss that was an alcoholic. I know now, and I didn't know what an alcoholic was, but you either had to be a member of the club or go to the drink at the bootleggers, and that's that. So my husband joined the club, and he too was an alcoholic, and he had been drinking since he was 12 years old. And if I forget to tell you, he just got out of Dorothea Dix the other week. And I talked to his counselor, and she said that, you know, he has a wet brain. He's never been able to get sober. This was the father's of my two children, and I've remarried since then. But anyway, I couldn't let this boss drank. And we'd go to the club, the Moose Club, you know, and I'd drink, and I knew I didn't act like those other people. I knew I didn't drink like they did. But, you know, I told my husband, I said, if you'll get me a pint or some beer and let me practice up and see how many drinks I can have before I lose control and all this stuff happens to me, and then I'm going back down there and do like those other people. But you know, I'd sit at the table while they was dancing and drink everybody's drinks. No one I was, you know. And I didn't dance because, I was scared to. This fear that we, you know, that I had all of my life, this impending doom was always there. Not as good as, not, you know. But anyway, I soon found out, you know, I never did learn how to drink like them other people. And I kept trying, and I'd count, you know, I'd have two beers, and I never got as much as I never did know when utopia was, you know, when to stop. And I never got enough. I love this feeling. This drove away these fears. And I felt comfortable, you know, for a while, but it was just confusing, and as I said, I was an instant alcoholic waiting to happen. So we'd go to church, you know, and I'd have to take these little kids to church, and we'd go to the club on Saturday night, and I'd go in hungover and sit there when that preacher, you know, and he's a preacher, and I wish he'd hurry up so I can go home and get that cold beer out of the refrigerator. And then things started happening. It accelerated fast. See, we were in our 20s. I was probably 27, I guess, but you see, I had to take these kids to church, and I had to be in the missionary society, and I had to be in the home demonstration club, and I had to go to choir practice, and I had to be the youth council for the little kids and take them on trips on Sunday. And I didn't have a whole lot of time to drink, you know, and hide it and stuff. But I got to thinking, anybody doing all that mess? And PTA president at the school, and being a grade parent in both of the kids' rooms. And God, you know, you needed to get drunk every once in a while doing all that mess. So pretty soon, you know, things was just happening, and I don't know who suggested. My husband lost his job, and I was about to get fired. And we decided what we needed was to move away from Mom and his mom and all the family, you know. So we moved to Jacksonville, Florida. And you take Gertrude out of that. Never been out of North Carolina, hardly, you know. But my husband had some sisters down in Florida, and we moved to Jacksonville. And you take me, I had never had anything but that down at that Moose Club and that White Lightning, and sneak out the window to the bootleggers, you know, and they had clay holes. They made brick there, and it's a wonder I didn't fall in one and drown, where I'd stumble around in the night through those places to just get me a beer, you know, or whatever. So we moved, and we were going to always start over. We came to Jacksonville, and we weren't going to drink, you know, and we didn't for 6 weeks. I got a job in a beauty shop there, and of course, I had to take this Florida State Board, and they say it's next to California, that the roughest too. And I was scared, and I couldn't do nothing, you know. But I even put off a bill, a drink, you know, it made it easier to get a drink and clean the house, you know, and this stuff. But anyway, we lasted about 6 weeks in Jacksonville, and I would stumble around, and I'd go to these bars. You know, I'd never been in a bar. I really hadn't. Till I came down here. And I'd go and I'd drink. And these two little children, you see, God's done so much for me. He put this little old lady in the apartment next door that would take care of my two children. They were like 7 and 9 about then, I guess. And I'd go out at night, and things would happen to me. And the things I have thought about, I have a gorgeous room here looking out over the ocean, the ripples. It's beautiful. And it's brought back so many memories of when I'd go to these bars in Jacksonville. And there was nights when I woke up out on the beach, not knowing who I was in the bed with or how I got there. And that's a living hell. And you've got to drink to forget this stuff. You hate yourself. But I'd wake up out there and not even know the person's name or how I got there. And I want to tell y'all, you guys didn't look so hot the next morning either.
You really didn't, you know. And we look like a bunch of hags, but... But you've got to drink to forget this stuff, and you know, and you love your children, and you don't want to be this way, and you don't know what in the... You don't know what's wrong with you. And then the police got me over there. They caught my husband. I don't know why I'd always take up my husband's... Take up for him when they got caught for drunk driving and stuff, you know. But this husband, he got caught, and I told the police, and they couldn't lock him up. And I was a cussing in a community, you know, my language wasn't so good. Anyway, they just locked me up for profanity and drunk. And I give them a false name, and then they sent me to a farm somewhere for 10 days, and nobody could find me. Because they'd give them the wrong name, Genevieve McMurray. I don't know where I dreamed that up from. I'll never forget it. Well... Needless to say, and then one of these nights, could you imagine going to that bar drinking all night long? Or go, I don't know where I went, but I had to drive from Jacksonville to Tallahassee for the state board exam. With a hangover, hadn't even been to sleep, and that thing lasted 8 hours, and I had to take this little old lady for a model at next door to me. And I didn't dare. She was another mama. You didn't drink in front of people like that. And you think I wasn't sick, and I couldn't even stop after I finished that exam to get a beer. You know, and I tell you, just throwing up this, and shaking. God, I'd shake. And if I ever got her out of the car, I know I had something to drink. I don't know. I'll never understand. But anyway, needless to say, that didn't last long, and we had to moved back to North Carolina. I called Mom and told her the house had burned down, sent us some money to get home on. You know, I just tell a lie when the truth would do. And we got back, and I won't ever forget that. We didn't have any money, and we'd stop along the road, and I'd beg for food for those two little children. And I didn't want to be this way. I didn't want to be this way. And we went... We finally got back home, and it was going to be different. We were going to move back in that little house when we got jobs, and I opened, I think I opened a beauty shop in my home then, I'd always drink and drive. I never did understand these people would sit there with a hangover and wouldn't drive the car to go get them something to drink. I had a neighbor like that, and he'd sit there and die, you know. But they better off than I am, because I tell that patrolman or policeman, whatever, that I won't drinking. In fact, before we went to Florida, that was the upshot of us going down there. I turned a 57 Ford, and we went down there 57, 58, 59. I turned that car upside down and crawled out of the window and hid, and the patrolman come by and said, "Are you drinking?" I said, "No, my husband spilled some liquor on me this morning." And you know, that's why you smell it. But actually, I went into the hospital, and then we moved to Florida right after that. And so anyway, we got back and went back to church now. And see, didn't nobody know about it. We'd sneaked off, and then in a little tiny community, they didn't know about all my drinking and stuff. So here we go back to church, and we don't drink for 6 months. And we have to live with Mom and Daddy, and I didn't dare drink nothing in Mama's house. You know, I was scared to death of her. So we drank and left and was going to move back in the house, and that called for a celebration. This was in 62, in August of 62, and getting away from Mama, you know, and we got us a little drink. And this is how booze affected me. Within 24 hours after I'd had the first drink, I didn't want to be this way, and I couldn't understand. And so we were down, I know you've heard of Fort Bragg. It's about 30 miles from Sanford. And I wanted to kill myself. I didn't want to be this way. And so the way I'm going to do it, I get off of the main 87 highway over on a little dirt street, and it's about four people live down the road there, and I get in the middle of the little dirt road and sit down and want the car to run over me and kill me. Why didn't get out there on the main highway? So this, and somebody saw me and knew me and called Mama, and she called the sheriff, and they put me in jail for safekeeping. Because I was trying to commit suicide. And I won't ever forget somewhere, I knew everybody. I'd worked in the beauty shop and did the jailer's wife's hair. So they didn't search me or nothing. I just took my little pint of liquor on in, and I don't know how I got up with that, but in the cell with me, and started screaming and hollering and telling them I was going to burn their jail down. I did. I had to pay for a mattress there. Set it on fire, and they didn't put it out, and I about smothered. and cussed Mama all night. Terrible. See, and then the next morning she went into court and got commitment papers and had me put in the insane asylum over there because we didn't want treatment centers back then. This was in 62, August of 62. It was on Daddy's birthday. I won't ever forget it, the 11th. And these two deputies took me over there, and I knew one of them. I knew he'd run around on his wife, and I said, if you don't stop and get me some beer, I'm going to tell on you. And so, you know, and that other one said, you suppose she would? He said, you better believe she will. And they'd catch me for drunk driving. And dear little old Sheriff Holder, he'd say, Gertrude, you're the best hairdresser anywhere around here, but why do you drink? I didn't know why I drank. You know, and I didn't know what was wrong with me. I got over there at John Umstead's State Division of State Hospital, and that psychiatrist asked me, did I drink? And I said, maybe sociably. And they wanted to know what was wrong with me, and I said, you need to get Mom over here for about 30 days and get her all right, and you can throw my husband in, and I'll be okay. And y'all know I believe that stuff. Well, so my husband come, he didn't like Mama much better than I did anyway, and he was a drinking. He'd come take me out on leave, and we'd go over at the little place and drink beer all day. And, you know, sitting around drinking some beer, how two alcoholics could plan up something. And we decide we're going to hide me out in Duke Hospital and get some stomach surgery. And I went by there, and this was Labor Day weekend, and they told me to, they said, now, you take these, some sleeping pills or nerve pills, you take these and come back in Tuesday morning. Well, and we went by the liquor store at Chapel Hill down the road, and I was gone 3 weeks on unauthorized leave from the state hospital. So I wrote these, we didn't have no money, but, you know, them was the days of counter checks. They had them on the counter at the cash register, you know, and I knowed how Mama's bank account was, and I knew she had money in it, too. And a mama that didn't love her only daughter any more than to put her in the insane asylum needed some checks wrote on her. and then they found me and put me back when you were, a legally committed patient in the state hospital, they look for you and they take you back when you leave. And they took me back. I thought I'd been gone three. I said, where's my clothes? They said, we sent them home. I said, well, I ain't been gone but, say, 3 days. And I really did. We've been to Florida and back twice, wrote all these checks. And so anyway, the upshot of that was to put my husband in there, too. And we were both over there, and I left there, and Mama was taking care of my little children, you know. But when I got out of there, Mama hadn't paid those checks off, you know. And when you sign somebody else's name to the check, they call it forgery. And that's what they done got together on us, else I'd have been dead. I mean, you know, he was the type that the violence, he'd beat me and get the butcher knife after me and run me around and around the house. And it's the guy at home likes for me to tell his aunt why I thought about Everett. But he'd plug in the electric iron and I'd sit there and he said I was too sorry to hit with it cold and he'd heat it up and I'd sit there and wait for it to get hot for him to hit me with it. So I wasn't very bright, you know. But this thing, and so I was arrested, and he was too, and we were charged with forgery and uttering. And you take two practicing alcoholics and put them on probation, and them trying to drink, and them telling you you can't drink,
and him calling them up, telling them, I'm drinking, and he ain't telling on you. You got a mess on your hands. Well, upshot of this was the 25th of March in 1963. The first day of June, this is sad, but this is where alcohol took us. The probation, the little children were took to the grandparents, and the mother and father took to jail for probation violation, revocation. And we, and Sheriff Holder himself, he took my husband by Central Prison in Raleigh and took me to Woman's Prison in Raleigh. And this is where Alcoholics Anonymous found me. This is where you people found me, at Woman's Prison in Raleigh, North Carolina. And I won't ever forget, it was like a load was lifted. I didn't have to drink. I didn't have to fight anymore. I didn't have to be this way. And this is where, you know, the superintendent had me, said maybe I had a problem with drinking. And this is where Tom I, many of you know him, he was the first one to tell us at this little group. It was about 80 girls that we went to the meetings there. It was a good group, an excellent group. And I knew, some way I found out that those people came from 100 and 150 miles away and came over there to bring these AA meetings, and they didn't get paid for it. You know, and that I didn't think you did nothing for nobody without getting something back, you know. I didn't know what love was. And you know, without a price tag on it, you didn't do nothing for anybody. But anyway, they meant something to me. And I went to AA, and I had a 3 to 5 year sentence, 3 years. And this is where I finished high school there. And I stayed busy, and I worked as a nurse. And I was paroled one day after my 9 months there. And Tom had gotten me two outside sponsors. He knew I was a tough one. And he told me, or he told us, that it was tough leaving that prison, being an alcoholic, a woman alcoholic, and being an ex-convict. And it was tough. And I left there on March the 6th, 1964. And I won't ever forget it. Mama, I didn't have no driver's license. See, I'd had two charges, and they done took them for 4 years anyway. I'd had two drunk drivings where I didn't get straightened out. And both of my sponsors was out of town. Couldn't find them. Parole officer met me and took me around, and he showed me where the AA meeting was. And Mama took me, and I said, Mama, I think they meet at 8 o'clock, and I think it's over at 9. You can come back and get me. And I won't ever forget that meeting. It was March the 6th, 1964. And why I remember it is, I'll tell you that later. I got out of prison on the 5th of March. You know, you don't forget that. Now, I'm bad at dates and things, but she took me back, and I won't ever forget that. It's got a little brick sidewalk, and they've recently redone the building, and they had their own little building over there, and it was made out of the brick, you know. And that thing seemed a mile long, and I went in there alone, and I got in there, and it was 40 men and no women. See, the women hadn't, I've seen the women come into Alcoholics Anonymous. And there was this little old man in there, and he was the meanest little old thing you've ever seen. And he had the farm next to us. And I didn't know he was over there walking around on that farm, walking off hangovers, you know, and stuff. And his name was Claude. And, you know, and I knew everybody in there, but I didn't know they was in this Alcoholics Anonymous thing. I'd known them, you know, in business and everything. And I went to meetings, and they went to meetings out of town. We'd go to 8 a week. We'd go to Sunday afternoon, you know, and drive a long distance. So there was a meeting going and a meeting there and a meeting coming back. And I loved it. And this was this big bunch of brothers and daddies, you know, the first time anybody'd ever understood me. And this is the first time I'd ever felt that I belonged and I felt comfortable. And I loved this thing. There was one woman member there, but she didn't go to meetings, and they just took me under their wing. And little old Claude, he was a mean little old man. He told me to always sit on the front row because I would just, as sick as I was, the sickest, hard-headedest thing he'd ever seen in his life, and I might hear a little bit. And I've always sat on the front row. But needless to say, I knew that this marriage couldn't work, and went into court to get, he had to have 2 years separation and to dissolve this marriage. And we, I went home. I had been 14 months without a drink, going to AA every night, and I went home and called the cab and got a bottle, and I drank. And Mama called the chairman of the board. She didn't call my parole officer and told him I was drinking. She just called the chairman of the board and said, she's drunk, y'all better come get her. And they did. And here I am, bouncing in and out of the penitentiary, and her hiring a lawyer to get me back out. Well, to make a long story short, I got out again in 6 months. She got me out, and they wouldn't let me go back home and operate the beauty shop. They made me stay in Raleigh. This little Al-Anon lady gave me a room, and I could walk back and forth to the little beauty shop they got me a job in. And I went to AA, and I met my present husband, Vernon, in 1965, and I hated that parole board for making me work for somebody else. You know, I was just so sick. And the pupil won't ready. And when the pupil's ready, the teacher will appear. But I won't ready. And it takes what it takes. And I know that I'm the hard-headedest alcoholic there ever was. I really do. But anyway, I went back out there and got back out and went to work in that little beauty shop and... this alcoholic hired me, and she's still very sick. She's never come to Alcoholics Anonymous. But anyway, that didn't last but about 3 months. I spent 2 years and 6 days. They took me back again. And I finished that sentence. I did 2 years and 6 days with good time. And I left there on every year on March the 5th, I'd leave. That's why I remember when I went to AA the first time. Well, I left there on March the 5th again, and that's my brother's birthday, my baby brother's birthday. And so I'd spend Christmas out there, you know, for 3 years away from my little kids, and I couldn't stand for my kids to see me there. I never saw them while I was there because I didn't want them to see their mother in prison. But anyway, Vernon and I, all the way describes one of these AA relationships. Vernon was 38 years old, hadn't never been married, and he was in AA, and some friends introduced us, and he hadn't been sober long, I think about a year, I didn't know what love was. Y'all, when I come to Alcoholics Anonymous, I thought love was sex. You know, and many of these little gals come into AA thinking, ain't got a thing to do with love, you know. And any of these girls that I sponsor today, I tell them, I said, no dating, none of that, no relationships to you being sober a year. Because it takes time to go to your AA and do your job straight, and you ain't got time to be getting pretty for no dates and stuff and these relationships. And we went on, but Vernon and I, we were married in April of 66, soon be 25 years that we're, and Vernon and I are still together, but it's been anything but a bed of roses. You know, I've married this alcoholic, and he was going to take care of me and not drink up my liquor and pour it out and let me drink comfortably if I did decide to get drunk. Well, he didn't do that. Hell, he got drunk with me. And we ended up in his hometown. We moved to Raleigh in 68. We both got drunk, and his mama just put both of us in Dix Hill. That's the state hospital. And we got out of there, and we moved to, I've lived in Raleigh ever since, and I've gone to AA there. And I'm one of these that didn't have a sponsor. My husband had a sponsor, and they were sitting around one day, and they said, Gertrude, his sponsor said, Gertrude, if you ain't got a sponsor, I said, I got five or six. He said, who are they?
And I said, well, I named them off. And he said, you don't need no five or six sponsors. He said, if you talk to enough of them, they tell you you're thinking just right. And they will. You know, I'm a conner. I was born conning. And my husband and him decided they'd appoint him for my sponsor. I wouldn't have never had one, I don't guess. I didn't have that much sense to get a sponsor. I'm about to ask nobody, smart as I was, you know. But anyway, I've had this man, I guess, for 23 years. I do have a man sponsor. And I've got women, of course, that I talk to. And back then, it wasn't that many women in. And like I said, and he's Dave C. in Raleigh. And I love this man. He's taught and given me so much. God, he's taught me. You know, I didn't know when me and Vernon, did you know when you have a fight and he leaves and stays 2 or 3 hours and he comes back in the door, ain't you supposed to say, where you been, so it can start all over again? But Dave said, no, Gertrude, you cook supper, you eat your supper, and you leave it, and you leave his supper on the table, and you go in the bedroom, and you keep your mouth shut, you know. And I learned to go in there and bite my tongue and just say, dear God, help me keep my mouth shut. You don't know how much that solves. And you know, and I've even been to Al-Anon. And God, I love you Al-Anon girls and some of my closest friends in Al-Anon. You know, I won't forget Lib J said Bill just got all right after he was 5 years sober, you know, and how good things was. Hell, Vernon got drunk after 5 years. And all this stuff, and I think, it's just been a mess. But I've started going to the Big Book group in Raleigh, and Vernon and I went over there. Well, the truth of it is, we didn't have no driver's license, and we're fixing to lose them. You know, we's drunk driving's pending, and we could ride the bus and walk to a lot of little meetings. So that's how we ended up at the Big Book group. We decided we'd visit around while we had license, and I started going in 68, and. I stayed 2 years and I drank again. And then in 1970, I like to look at this as my surrender. I fell on my knees and asked God to help me for the first time without telling him what I needed. And things started happening and I became comfortable and I didn't understand all this. My son came to live with me to go to college. And I knew this boy was a lot like his mama. And I won't ever forget the first time I found his glass of wine that he'd left in the car. And I called my sponsor. I'd call him. And I'd say, Jeff's drinking, and what am I going to do? And he said, Gertrude, what could your parents have said to you that would have helped you? You know, put yourself in his shoes. And I try to do that with the alcoholics that I know. And to have this love and compassion, you know. He said, would screaming and yelling have done you any good? No. He said, well, don't you do it. I kicked this kid out. I wasn't going to support his partying. I kicked Jeff out. And he stayed out there, I guess, he was 27. But God don't, you know, God don't close doors in my life without opening another one. My daughter came to Raleigh to live and to go to beauty school and to work in the beauty shop with me. And we had almost 20 years working together. And I went back later and bought this beauty shop that I'd been paroled to in Raleigh, and I operated it for 20 years. And I hired a guy on work relief. And he hasn't had to go back to prison. But I told him never would I hire another one. Buzz, this about drove me crazy. And you know, and I don't know, and I have to go to AA meetings, y'all. And all the times that I drink again, I didn't never quit going to AA. It's the only place I got to go. And if it weren't for y'all, I'd be dead. But I got into service work. The group let this old check writer handle our group's money. And I was so proud to balance that, you know, the check balance. And they let me do this, and I got to be GSR, I think, and then I went on to be DCM, an alternate delegate. And you know, North Carolina trusted me to run their AA business. It allowed me to be delegate. And I was to go to conference in 81 and 82
And to sit in Bill Wilson's chair in the little stone, the little cinder block building out there. And to see on the article in the grapevine that Neva had wrote that I did my fifth step with. This is a whole other story. And it was just beautiful. And I don't know what happened except the last paragraph in chapter 3 of this book. After 12 years and 2 months, I drank again. 1982. And if you'd told me that morning I'd have drank, I wouldn't have believed you. You know, and I'd heard this guy say at a conference, somebody in this room will drink again. And I didn't believe that. But somebody in this room will drink again. And this is so, and I hope that nobody in here will have to go through what I did. I got drunk, just like the book tells me. Resentment's my number one offender. I was having some problems that I wouldn't talk about. Pride. And, I don't know, I had gone to the liquor store, and the dash clock said 7:07. It was closed. I said, thank you, God. And I knew where another one was. I drove, and I went to another one. I'd never been in a self-service liquor store, and I got 2/5 of 100-proof vodka. Within 2 hours after I drank, I was going for help. And I ended up in a shopping center, lost, crazy. I had returned to insanity. This is what step 2 tells us. And I looked up, and there was 4 of them blue light cars surrounding me. 2 hours I got drunk driving. I had to go to that drunk driving school. And I had a good time there. But anyway, I drank. So that's a bunch of denials. You know, I just have fun. Tom says I can have fun walking behind a mule. But I got it. You know, that's just a total bunch. They're all alcoholics. They're just sitting in there denying, you know. And I'm thinking, I just had a ball with them. But anyway, I did what I had to do. And Dave got me in Fellowship Hall. And I came out and went right back to AA. I ain't never been to, unless they had jail and I couldn't have a meeting. That's the only way I don't go to AA. So, you know, I can't get up here and tell you I didn't go to AA for X times. That's why I got drunk. I got drunk because there comes a time when no human power, or last paragraph of chapter 3, that we, you know. So I went back to AA, to my home group. And God, I was doing all the delegates' work and doing, I'd done a good job. And I was talking everywhere and I was sponsoring half of Raleigh's AA women. And all this stuff. So I went back and wouldn't none of them people I sponsored speak to me. I didn't understand why Gertrude got drunk, you know. God had got drunk. And I didn't understand, and y'all don't know, it hurts like hell, and I hope nobody in here has to go through it, because it's tough coming back. And I went back, and wouldn't let me read or nothing. You ain't been sober long enough. And I got mad, and I left them. I went over at another little group. And y'all know, and I didn't tell you, I'm a member of the New Hope group in Raleigh, North Carolina. And I got that 12-step call. I don't remember how long it was from this little old son of mine. He said, Mom, I got a DUI 39. How you get in that alcoholic training center? I said, Jeff, you don't want to go over there. He did. We put him in there, and I'd like to tell you that he's secretary of our group, and we sit in meetings together, and I wouldn't take, he just wants me to go to a meeting every night, and I still go to 2 to 4 meetings a week, but I don't need to go take off work like Jeff does at 10 o'clock in the morning, go to early riser meeting. I mean, he didn't go to 90 meetings in 90 days, he went to 180. And he thinks I'm supposed to go every time he goes. And you just don't know what that kid gives me. He's coming up on his 5th birthday, and God, he's still so much like his mama. And he just tells it all, just like I do, you know. Vernon didn't go to AA for 6 years, but he's back now. And he's got 6 months sobriety again. But anyway, in 1978, my father died. I had 8 years sobriety and he was driving down the road in his pickup truck and he died with a heart attack. And my mama, you know, I'd been to mama and done this ninth step and I'd made things right with me and mama. And this list that we make, it was after the ninth step before I could ever put Gertrude on there. And I believe these steps is the only, you know, that's when I felt good enough about just as good as to put Gertrude on the list. And then Mama, my mother had bone cancer. And when Daddy died, I brought Mama to live with me. And my little old doctor, I went to my sponsor's doctor, you see. I wouldn't go to a doctor for several years after I came back because I didn't trust myself not to ask for something for my nerves. But Dave told me to go to his doctor, and he took care of my mama. And she stayed in the hospital 6 weeks. And you know, my mother, she told me just a few days before she died. She went to AA meetings with me, and I'd talk. She said, I don't pay any attention to Gertrude. And she said, you know, honey, you are today in life what I've always wanted you to be, and Alcoholics Anonymous has made you that way. My mama loved you. And thank God she didn't have to see me go back to drinking. I only drank 2 or 3 days because that policeman got my vodka and took it away from me. Had it down there in court, you know. And, of course, the kids and I told Jeff, I said, Jeff, why didn't y'all let me try some of that marijuana and cocaine? I was drunk anyway. He said, God knows, Mama. You know, and these kids, y'all are beautiful. Only reason I didn't, and I tell them, I don't share. I ain't to be judging y'all about that. I have never had a marijuana cigarette. And I don't know what it does to you, and don't be asking me about it, because I haven't had that experience. And I tell some of them old guys around the group, said, you leave them alone. Have you smoked any? No. I said, how you know how it feels? And the cocaine, you know, I don't know nothing about that, and I don't, claim to. Of course, I had some baking soda in a little baggie in my pocketbook when that patrolman got me, and he asked me what that was, and I told him it's cocaine. And we got this guy that come in the group, and he analyzed. I said, you analyze my baking soda, Charles? He said, I probably did. But, you know, when my mama, you know, she it was all right. I have a brother that came to me. My brother came, and he was like me, too. I put him in Dorothea Dix. This before the treatment. And I told him to get back to Sanford and stick as close to those AA guys as he could. And he died four years ago this coming April. And I put his 10-year chip in the casket with him. It's 4 years between us. I went back to AA, as I said, and I haven't found it. I haven't had a desire for a drink. And God gave me the gift of sobriety again. And all I can do is just do the best I can. And I don't have to be perfect. Just be the best me that I can be. That's all my God wants me to be. And he's the same one that they told me about in church, but I couldn't ever understand him there. And 3 years ago, this coming April, I went into my doctor for a physical. Told him I had this little funny pain up here, and he put me on the cardiogram and introduced me to the cardiologist and sent me straight to the hospital for a cath. Called a code blue on me that afternoon, sent me straight to surgery, and they did 7 bypasses. I don't do nothing simple. Let's do it all the way. I won't do nothing a little bit. I asked him, how many was you supposed to have? He said, that's about it. And it's just a beautiful, beautiful life. It's just, it's nothing like it. You know, if you come in Alcoholics Anonymous, I'll guarantee you, if there's any new people out here, things will happen to you beyond your wildest dreams. You know, I've never been on an airplane. I got on there with Dave and Edith and went to the Denver. To the International. That was my first ever. And Dave told me that was the biggest AA meeting I'd ever been to in my life, with the 20,000 there. But you know, this son, I'm so proud of him. My daughter doesn't have a problem. And let me tell you what I'm doing today, and I'm going to sit down and shut up. I retired from the beauty shop after the heart surgery, and I still, I go to the funeral home and do the dead lady's hair, you know. And I've been doing that 20 years, and I still do that. And I'm raising dogs. And Vernon's retired, and we got little dogs, and I'll be having, I hate so bad to have to leave here tomorrow night, but I've got dogs entered in the big show in New York City, Monday and Tuesday, and then I've got a little Pomeranian, entered Sunday morning at the show at 9 o'clock in the specialty. And you know the little palms you see on TV with the Calcan commercial? I got his little half-brothers and sisters at my house. And Vernon's home taking care of the babies. And the granddaughter is in junior showmanship. My son had a little girl, and he and his wife separated when they were a year old, and they went to telling me about child support stuff. I said, I don't want to hear nothing about it. Neither one of you is messing up my chances of having a relationship with my little granddaughter. This is what Alcoholics Anonymous gives me. And I'm saying, I don't care what y'all do, just leave me alone with me and Amber. Her name is Amber. She'll be 16 in April. She's qualified for the Westminster show for the past 3 years in junior showmanship. She shows a Pharaoh hound. And, we're her dad and her stepmother. That stepmother's a big time Al-Anon. And they're going to drive up, and I'll meet them up there Saturday night. And, see, my Debbie, I that's another story. I met her. They moved and got me out of that world directory like they was talking about here, you know, last night in the traditions play. And her husband came to Raleigh and from Chicago and found me. And, of course, he didn't never get to AA. I had to go to Chapel Hill and get him out of jail. But anyway, Debbie was in college up there. And so they ended up, and I told Debbie, she just have to leave him. She come live with me. You know, that time I got to my house was like a treatment center. I just bring them home, live with me. You know, and that's all right, too. I saw a little girl at Durham at a meeting, and then I talked, and she said, that lady talks about dogs and chickens. I know she's the one I stayed with. And she had 3 years sobriety and a little baby. You know, you never know what's going to happen. But I've got to go to that, you don't know, God, it's just a beautiful, beautiful life. And, I just want to thank y'all for my life. And I'm going to tell you, it's something in this big book, it's my favorite thing. And it comes from the story, Freedom from Bondage. And, this fits in so much with your theme here this weekend. It says, the great experience that released me from the bondage of hatred and replaced it with love is really just another affirmation of the truth I know. I get everything I need in Alcoholics Anonymous. Everything I need, I get. And when I get what I need, I invariably find that it is what I wanted all the time. Thank you for putting up with me and allowing me to share my experience strength and hope with you, and God bless every one of you, and I love you, and thank you for my life.